our cultural heritage.
My humble salutations to Brahma, Vishnu and Maheshwara and the entire galaxy of divine beings. Culture and civilization are two distinct aspects of the development and progress of a race or a nation, but they need not be looked upon as distinctly separate. It is presumed by erudite scholars and thinkers that civilization is a reflection of the material progress of the people as is represented by the dress they wear, the palatial buildings they live in, the sophisticated gadgets they use, the great discoveries and inventions of science and technology that have made life smooth, happy and comfortable. All those which one can possess by means of wealth and power. This view is disputed by many. This alone is not civilization. In their well-considered opinion, this is not civilization. Lin Yutong, the Chinese philosopher, remarked that if a daily bath and a winter wrap around the belly are marks of civilization, my dog is more civilized. According to him, civilization is definitely something more than mere material comfort. Then it comes very close to culture, for culture indicates the spiritual development of an individual and collectively of a highly advanced society. In the Vedic view of life, the dividing line between the two is so thin that it is lost sight of because there is a harmonious blending of the physical and the spiritual. In man's quest for the ultimate reality and his yearning for his union with the Supreme Being, the personal comforts are surrendered to the spiritual advancement. The soul is supreme, and all other faculties of the body function under its direction. There is no distinction between culture and religion. Religion is a way of life and determines man's relationship with God. Our religion derives its strength and sanctity from the Vedas. It is based upon our Sanatana Dharma, that is, eternal. When there was only one universal religion, one eternal code of conduct for all people, there was no need to give it a name. Only after hordes of other religious sects entered India, a name was given to it so as to distinguish it from other religions. Hinduism has no founder like Buddhism, Christianity, and Mohammedanism. Even these names were not given by their founders.
Gautam was not a Buddhist.
Jesus Christ was not a Christian. Nor was Prophet Muhammad a Mohammedan. They did not profess divinity. It was their followers who defied them and evolved rigid creeds in their names. The Hindu society has always been an open society with a universal outlook and respected and tolerated other religions. They have declared time and again that there is only one God and His manifestations are many, and that all prayers reach the same God, just as all waters
raining down from the sky
flow into the same ocean. Akashat patitam toyam yatha gachyati sagaram sarvadeva namaskaram kesavam prati gachyati. That is what it means. Hinduism has permitted and even fostered dissent and diversity right from the Vedic times. Perhaps this has proved to be its bane and has given scope for many inherent contradictions to develop. Hinduism
has not evolved
or promoted one unified view of life. There are six darshanas or six systems of philosophy. Vedas are respected as the ultimate authority on any matter, religious, philosophical or social. But Kapila's Sankhya has not accepted the Vedic view of the origin of creation, nor have the Nyaya or Vaisheshika of Kapila and Kanada. Charvaka even disputed the very existence of God and the sanctity of the Vedas. He was the first Nastika, an atheist in the world, according to the dictum, Nastiko Vedanindakaha. There is no finality about the Brahma Sutras of Badarayana. The aphorisms are not unequivocal, otherwise they would not have lent themselves to the rise of three commentaries on it, those of Shankara, Ramanuja and Madhva, and there would not have been three Siddhantas, the Advaita of Shankara, the Vishishta Advaita of Ramanuja and the Dvaita of Madhva, one contradicting the other.
Some of their lesser lights
have divided the society into a number of religious sects,
like the
Vaishnavas, Shaivas, Shaktayas, Ganapatyas, Bhairavas
and Vamacharas,
each claiming their own God as the supreme creator of this universe. Yet there has been an underlying unity among the diverse faiths and pursuits. Even this unity was shattered by the Buddha, who did not believe in the multiplicity of gods, idol worship, rebirth, and even the sanctity of the Vedas and the caste system. Though he had borrowed most of the general principles of the Vedic religion, thus Buddhism was a revolt against Hinduism. But unfortunately for it, it was swept out of the country by the reinforcement of the virile Hindu faith, mostly because of the efforts of the great preceptor Adi Shankara. Hinduism has survived many more onslaughts from outside. The Muslim invaders pillaged the country, demolished our temples, defaced our beautiful sculpture,
and forcibly converted the Hindus and married Hindu women,
and killed both Hindus and Buddhists who defied conversion. Then the Christians have smuggled themselves into the country with a Bible in one hand and a gun in the other. They have gained entry into our families through schools and hospitals and exploited our poverty and ignorance. They pray for us
and convert, offering trivial benefits
to the poor and the lowly, and convert them. This process is going on still unimpeded.
The Hindu culture and its great heritage are at the crossroads today,
facing the grave danger of slow, quiet, and steady extermination. There are many internal factors responsible for this sorry state of affairs. Firstly, we became an easy prey to the wily machinations of the British diplomats, thanks to our great souls and visionaries.
We gave our brothers of the Holy Crescent Pakistan on a golden platter,
and to the Brotherhood of the Holy Cross
and a large chunk of the northeastern provinces
where the people are Indians but Christian in blood and faith. They are virtually lost to us. We have in India another Pakistan thirsting for our blood and land. They prosper by sufferance and are more Indian
than Indians. We are proud of our spirit of tolerance and accepted
the anti-Hindu rebel Buddha as the
ninth avatar.
No wonder if we accept the other two also, the other two intruders, as avatars. Secondly, we have our pseudo-secular overlords who go all out to placate the cross and the crescent, not out of any fraternal love for them, but only to perpetuate themselves in the citadels of power. There is one code of law for them and another for us.
The Indian Imam
and the Pope are against legal termination of pregnancy and family planning. So they proliferate like mice. For us, there is no enough food, water, shelter, clothing, or education for a third child. But they can enjoy
unfettered polygamy. We are forbidden
by law to have a similar privilege. Thirdly, there is a legion of the venerable rationalist scientists to whom God is a taboo. Idol worship is an idiotic exercise of the ignorant. Temples and other holy structures are anti-social centers. Miracles are a figment of the imagination of the gullible. Extrasensory perceptions are the property of a diseased mind, and superstitions are the pastime of the laity. Stalin
of life
and Mao must have prayed to God for rescue in their last moments, when every human effort had failed to save them so may these rationalists. Our cultural heritage is precious, but our culture is in peril. The national policy of culture specified by the government of India does not save it, because they have not defined clearly what our culture is or what our cultural heritage is.
For they are ignorant of it or impervious to it.
We want, therefore, an alternative cultural policy of India. We exhort and beseech all sane and right-thinking Indians who have any respect for our ancient Vedic culture to apply their minds seriously to this issue and come out
and find such an alternative. The task is superhuman, but is worthy of our united effort. Thank you.